Good afternoon. I think it's afternoon now. Not yet. Good morning. Good morning. Well, first, I'd just like to thank the organizers of this panel for including some local perspective and local context to the issue of place and reproductive health rights and justice. I think if there were any example, glaring example, of the role of place and where you live and how you live, the conditions in which you live, how that can determine your health and quality of life, I would say that that definitely it's Louisiana. I'm sure there are some Louisianians in the audience that can attest to that as well. So as an APHA member, I will do my duty of also disclosing that I have no relationships to disclose, and I can move on. I'm going to try to give a little bit of the landscape of Louisiana in terms of reproductive health and rights within a justice framework, and look at some of the socio-political conditions that impact reproductive health for many women and youth in Louisiana, and then talk a little bit about the Institute of Women and Ethnic Studies and the work that we do, both historically and giving some historical context of the involvement of the Institute, or IWES, in the reproductive justice movement, and then talk about some of our current efforts in New Orleans and in the state of Louisiana. So what does reproductive health and reproductive rights look like in Louisiana? What's the landscape? Women of color, poor women, and the uninsured women are disproportionately affected by social conditions, policy decisions, poor policy decisions, and the increased decline in publicly funded reproductive health services and access to sexual health education for our young people in schools. And we'll talk a little bit more about some of those political challenges that we face that continue to plague these particular communities disproportionately. When we talk about social conditions, we're talking specifically around the high rates of poverty in these communities, also looking at religion and conservative politics, and this legacy of racism. I think what we see is these intersections of race, gender, and class, and how that impacts access to reproductive health and rights in Louisiana. Particularly when we talk about religion, I think the biggest issue is the sort of economic hold that religion can have in the state, and how that can really determine access and further presenting its barriers to access to reproductive health services, and continues to be a concern. Many of these factors intersect, and Carol talked a lot about intersectionality and what that means for women and women of color and poor women living in the state, and how all of these conditions sort of work together on the lived experience of women of color in the state of Louisiana. Particularly in New Orleans, a community that was devastated by a man-made and natural disaster, Hurricane Katrina, left communities the most vulnerable, communities that I talked about, most vulnerable and at the highest level of mental distress, emotional distress, lack of access to safe and affordable housing, which continues today, continued displacement and movement within community. We've seen the total destruction of a public health care system that's continuing to be fragmented and sort of reeling from what existed pre-Katrina. Also, lack of economic and educational opportunity. I think oftentimes what we see in the media, what may be portrayed, is this sort of economic boom and development, and it's really almost a tale of two cities, where you see lots of development across the city, but that doesn't touch and reach so many of the communities that we've talked about, and in particular women of color and uninsured women that have least access to publicly funded resources and services in the community. this is just a little bit of the demographics to give you further context. Half of the population of Louisiana and New Orleans is comprised of females in the city and the state. There's a much larger concentration of the African American population in the city of New Orleans, which is historical and is now beginning to return to some pre-Katrina numbers, but still was greatly impacted and further displaced as it relates to Hurricane Katrina and the disaster. And what we're also seeing is an increase in the Latino population here in the city, but on the converse, not having systems within the city to really address the specific needs of those communities more systemically. When we're talking about education and having language access, we're seeing continued fragmentation and an inability to address those specific needs. High rates of poverty, almost 20% of women living in Louisiana are living in poverty. That's 100% of the federal poverty level. Many children, single parent families with children, 46% of those living in poverty are single parent families with children. And 391,000 Black and Latino children living in Louisiana are living below 200% of the poverty level. Louisiana rankings, 48th of the 2014 American Health Ranking reports for health. And that goes across physical health and mental health and well-being in the state. Women of reproductive age in particular, continuing to see high levels of poverty. Many of these women within reproductive age relying on publicly funded and supported contraceptive services and supplies. This is of concern because we see a continued breakdown of public funding to support reproductive health in the state. Further privatization, which creates no standards, no sort of protocols to protect women and to make sure that women are provided the most up-to-date services and resources for to support their reproductive health and well-being. 27% of Louisiana women between 15 and 44 were uninsured, and only 16% were enrolled in Medicaid. So this presents a huge gap. And as many of you know, Louisiana has not expanded Medicaid and also does not participate in a state-run insurance exchange. So this further burdens so many women of color and the poor and those who are uninsured and leaves them with no access to health care in the state. So what does sexual and reproductive health look like in Louisiana? Louisiana consistently ranks among states with the highest rates of STIs, including HIV. We rank second in the country for gonorrhea rates, third in the country for primary and secondary syphilis. Rates of unintended pregnancies and teen births remain higher than the national average, ranking sixth and highest in the U.S. In 2012, a fourth of the new HIV infection rates reported were among youth 13 to 24. And I'll talk a little bit later about access to comprehensive sex education and limitations on that based on the political challenges that exist. So political challenges, I'll go right into some of the policies, current policies that impact sexual and reproductive health in the state. In terms of sex education, there is no state mandate. The state statute currently allows local decision making. So school districts can determine whether or not they will teach sex education, whether or not it will be abstinence-only education, or whether it will be comprehensive sex education. All sex education, if taught in the state, must stress or cover abstinence. There's no sexual health education prior to seventh grade. Only in the city of New Orleans can you begin at third grade. This is a huge challenge. We cannot survey students on their sexual behavior. The Institute just held a meeting yesterday where we looked at the impact of trauma and mental health on decision making. National literature shows us that there is a correlation between stress and mental health and the link to sexual risk-taking behavior. Yet, in Louisiana, we can't ask students about their sexual behavior. So this not only gives us limited understanding of what young people are doing in terms of risk, but it also further diminishes funding that can come into the state to support sex education and providing sex education to students. We can also cannot also distribute condoms in schools. So when we're doing condom demonstrations, when we're doing sex education programming, it's difficult for us to do a lot of the skill building activities to promote safer sex practices. In terms of contraception, there's no policy in effect for emergency contraception, no policy in effect for private insurance coverage of contraceptive services, and there are huge gaps in coverage. You must be below 200% of the federal poverty level for publicly funded family planning eligibility. So again, further showing these huge gaps in who has access to reproductive health services in the state. And I think we probably have some of the strictest abortion access policies. Just recently in the 2013 legislative session, there were further restrictions on abortion access in the state, 24-hour waiting periods, mandated counseling. You cannot do the counseling and procedure on the same day, so women have to come back a second day or a second trip to receive a procedure. An ultrasound is required. Parental consent for minors is required. There's no public funding available, only in the instance of life, rape, or incest. Medical professionals and institutions may refuse. So in a lot of rural areas in Louisiana where there may be only one medical facility, and you have to have admitting privileges at that facility, the facility refuses to provide admitting privileges for physicians, or there are no facilities available, so many women are left without any choice. ACA health plans may not provide coverage of abortion, and then telemedicine is also prohibited. Providers must have admitting privileges at local hospitals, as I mentioned, so further restrictions have left very few resources in the state for abortion access. Okay. So that's sort of the landscape here in Louisiana, but there's a lot of work being done. The Institute of Women and Ethnic Studies has a very long and rich history in the reproductive justice movement. Founded by Drs. Denise Shervington and Dr. Billie Jean Pace, IWEF uses a very collaborative approach and sort of multi-leveled approach, looking at these intersections and the influences of these social conditions to influence physical, psychological, and emotional health and well-being of vulnerable populations. So this history goes back, starting in 1993, with the production of a video, It's Her Choice, to force the inclusion of voices of women of color in reproductive health and the reproductive rights movement. In 2000, the organization created the Reproductive Health Bill of Rights for women of color so that women of color could have a tool that can be used to voice their rights and to push for rights to access to reproductive health and rights. And that history has continued till today as we continue more specifically to do a lot of work around adolescent sexual health and access for young people to quality, medically accurate, and age-appropriate sex education. These are some of our comprehensive sex ed advocacy initiatives. We're doing a lot of work around sex education and implementing sex education programs in schools, but also working with young people and building on their leadership capacity to work towards their own well-being and health and fighting for their own well-being and health. We're working with college students, we're working with high school students, training them in advocacy and working to build their leadership and to create opportunities for their voices to be heard. We were recently funded by the Packer Foundation to begin a project called Creating a Future Together. And this is where we're working with historically Black colleges and universities and working with HBCU students to create opportunities on college campuses for them to serve as leaders and to continue to advocate for reproductive health and rights in the state, but also at the local level in their communities. So I'm going to wrap it up here. Wow. Good timing.